Welcome to Cassandra Explains It All, a podcast where we take a magnifying glass to all of our treasures from the past.
He started Sublime.
He had this beautiful gift to sing.
But not even his bandmates.
Brad was on hard drugs.
His parents.
I said, I'm deathly afraid that you're going to kill yourself.
His wife.
His addiction was just eating him up.
Or his one-year-old son.
He told me, I got to straighten up and I'm going to do it for my kid.
Could stop Brad Noel. VH1 Behind the Music, Sublime.
He'd overdosed.
The band that died before it took off. Tonight at 9, 8 Central.
He's gone, man. That's that.
Only on VH1.
Okay, perfect. So today we are going to be talking about Sublime. And I feel like for me, Sublime is just one of the most nostalgic bands ever. It brings me right back to the 90s. Of course, I'm so glad that I didn't get one of those sun tattoos. Do you know anybody that has one of those tattoos? This episode is for them. I really want to dig into how, like, in the 90s, drugs had become synonymous with, like, high-profile rock bands like Stone Temple Pilots, Pantera, Depeche Mode, like Alice in Chains, Smashing Pumpkins. And it kind of resulted in the industry trying to establish, like, health programs for artists and actually, you know, make it appear that they were trying to take care of the talent, right? Which is interesting because we know so many artists have died of overdoses since Bradley. And Bradley's really going to be the focus of this episode. I mean, Sublime in general, but definitely Brad and his overdose and just kind of the parallels between his life and, yeah, I'm about to say it. Aaron Carter. Guys, do you think I have a problem? I feel like the girl in Mean Girls who, like, can't stop talking about Regina George. It's like, I can't stop talking about Aaron Carter. But I feel like there are a lot of parallels here with Sublime and Aaron and Bradley and Aaron. You know, going back to the record labels and how they have just, like, ultimately repeatedly failed these artists over and over and over. Brad's wife actually said about the label that as soon as he'd get out of rehab and he'd get clean, the record label would put him right back on the road. They'd never give him enough time to stay clean or to start working on a program. And that's not their business. They're in the business of making music and records. You know, that was her quote. And I think that's really true. And let's start with the vibe, right? I mean, they seem like a jam band, happy-go-lucky vibe. When you actually hear the lyrics, it's not happy music at all. Like, the vibe, y'all, is not the vibe. I think that there's this, like, idea out there. People think that Sublime is like this chill, you know, party acoustic guitar music, but it's like you're really singing along to songs about date rape and rape being funny in general. The subject matter in these songs and the attitude about the subject matter and how many people relate to it is so sad. And I blame society, you know, as I always do. I blame society. Like, I can watch a lot of things from the 90s and understand that it was a different time, but we typically say, like, oh, yikes, I'm, you know, ashamed that I liked that, or I can't believe that we found that acceptable. But with Sublime, like I said, I mean, people's attitude about this band and the subject matter that they sing about so cavalierly is truly, truly just like idiocracy, dystopian world that I don't want to live in. So I'm really hoping that everybody agrees with me in the comments on that so I don't have to feel so alone. I mean, songs about hard drug use and alcoholism, escapism, and, you know, basically like nihilistic dystopianism. And that's all fine, actually. I think that's great. But it's weird that people put it on as if it's like jam band good time, like let's have a day at the beach, because that's not the vibe. The band has a song about knowing it's wrong to be into a 12-year-old but not caring. It's weird that we still listen to it, because I don't think that you're a bad person if you still listen to Sublime and you still love their songs like Mary Baby and Date Rape and stuff. I just think that we listened to this band so much while we were going through puberty and like through these formative years that you know, maybe like your brain isn't even able to process what they're actually saying. It's just like an immediate nostalgic thing. Here's the story of the song Date Rape. This is what Bradley said. He said, "I've never raped anyone, at least as far as I can remember. We were at a party a long time ago and we were all talking about how much date rape sucked. And this one guy was like, date rape isn't so bad. If it wasn't for date rape, I'd never get laid. Everybody at the party was bummed out about it, but I was cracking up and wrote a funny song about it." I've never raped anyone, at least as far as I can remember. Okay. That is so disturbing. I'm glad that at least everybody at the party was, quote, bummed out about it. Yeah, I mean, it's just time to say goodbye to Sublime, you guys. We're gonna have to, it's like burn it or use it. We're gonna have to burn it. The song Santeria, that just the song Santeria is enough for Sublime to be canceled in 2023. Half the song is about spiritual enlightenment. The other half is about murdering his girlfriend and her new boyfriend. Yikes. Like, which one is it, guys? Let's pick a lane. Also, April 29th, 1992, your boy sings the wrong date in the song. Not when the Rodney King riots happened. So I'm guessing these weren't exactly, you know, autobiographical. You know, the lyrics go, if you look at the street, it wasn't about Rodney King. It's these fucked up situations and these fucked up police. It's about coming up and staying on top and screaming 187 on a motherfucking cop. It's basically like an All Lives Matter anthem before that was a thing. So yikes, this is embarrassing. Yeah, you're white and you're mad about the cops. And it's not about Mexicans or blacks. It's just about cops. That's not a look, man. We're not doing that. Not today. We are not waking up and choosing that today. I'm sorry. Guys, we got to get rid of Sublime. We got to stop. So people like this band because Brad died. That's my thesis. There were lots of similar bands that came out around this time. No one cares about them now at all because they're all still alive. Probably. I think it's probably why people think that they are the best. I mean, Cottonmouth Kings, far better. Sugar Ray, meh. I mean, look, I don't love Sugar Ray, but I'll say maybe better musicians than Sublime. Bloodhound Gang. It's like this hero worship thing. But the thing is, it's not funny or cool to OD. What's crazy is that K-Rock said that in 2014, Sublime was the third most played artist for the sixth year in a row. Guess who the other two bands were, guys? Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers. So you've got Nirvana, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Sublime. What do all three of these bands have in common, guys? Why is K-Rock, the California megastation, playing these bands? Why do they have these as the top three rotation for 6 years in a row? Well, every single one of them has someone who died. Most of Sublime's catalog is completely stolen or lifted from other bands, so we need to talk about that. I mean, it's totally cultural appropriation. You could say covering it to be nice, but like most people who listen to Sublime don't know that they didn't write Smoke Two Joints or like literally 90% of their songs. It's all samples, it's all stolen, and that's something where Shauna, executive producer Shauna Gutierrez, did want me to do an episode on Gwen Stefani and her cultural appropriation. And I thought, you know what? That's going to be like the perfect episode to do right after Sublime, because it is all right in that same wheelhouse, right? And Gwen Stefani and Sublime had some crossover music. I mean, that was like a whole thing in the 90s. I don't think we ever got Sublime on TRL though, but we got a lot of Gwen on TRL. Like a lot of No Doubt. And here's something I think a lot of people don't know, is that before the mainstream success of No Doubt and Sublime, Gwen Stefani actually did vocals to Saul Red on the 94 album Robin the Hood, which I think is my favorite Sublime album. I mean, yes, I am going to talk so much shit about Sublime in this episode and how we should definitely not like them, but of course, I mean, they're like ingrained into our DNA at this point. I know all of their albums. I know all of their songs. I'm not proud of it. It's just what it was at that time. And they also did this song. It was Sublime and No Doubt called Total Hate. And it was a 95. It was like a ska song But I mean, No Doubt kind of abandoned the whole ska thing after Tragic Kingdom. But yeah, No Doubt is so interesting, and we will talk all about them when we talk about Gwen Stefani. Oh, and No Doubt also did a cover of Sublime's DJs, but I digress. Like I said, most of Sublime's catalog is completely stolen or lifted from other bands, totally cultural appropriation, and you could say covering it, like I said, to be nice, but come on, let's get real. They were just being lazy. White people just need to leave reggae alone. And I'm not saying that this is reggae, because clearly it's not reggae. It is what white people think reggae is. It's definitely a situation where white people heard reggae and thought they needed to fuck with it and make it their own and emulate it. The Melodeon song, like the original Rivers of Babylon, it was even like in my church camp songbook. The Sublime version of that song is an abomination. I mean, Bob Marley kind of sucks too. If you like reggae or ska, but you don't want to listen to trash, you should listen to The Toots, The Maytals. You'll be a lot happier. And I'm not joking about like this being a case of where like a white kid heard reggae and thinks he needs to fuck with it. That's exactly what happened. I mean, Bradley was taken to the Virgin Islands when he was a child, and that's where he first heard reggae, and that's where, you know, that's when he decided to make that his identity as a Southern California white boy. And I get it. I mean, I'm from Florida. I wore puka shells for a hot minute, but I am not Hawaiian. And if you think about like Jack Johnson, here's the weird thing, right? He's kind of just a yuppie version of Sublime, okay? If Brad didn't die, do we think that Jack Johnson would have had a career? And like, is Brad dying the reason we have to deal with Jack Johnson? And if you like Jack Johnson, don't. Just go listen to Ben Harper. Far better. In fact, there's a Bonnaroo live performance on YouTube of Ben Harper singing Burn One Down, and I highly recommend it. Chef's kiss. Better than all of this trash music we're talking about. Like, if you are at a party and you see someone air DJing along with music playing, that's gonna be a sign that the music is awful, and that's something that happens with Sublime's music a lot, because Sublime would use like these weird DJ like drop-ins in acoustic songs. The Sublime Sun Tattoo, like we talked about, it's shockingly common. You shouldn't be allowed to own a dog if you have this tattoo. You just shouldn't. I'm sorry, but like that's the Aaron Carter of it all too. We're gonna have to talk about the dog abuse. I almost got this tattoo, and I am so glad that someone stopped me. So glad. Oh my God, could you imagine? I think at one point my cousin told me that he would tattoo my back, but only if I got the Sublime Sun. So yeah, really glad I didn't do that. But yeah, labels in general, I think, should be ashamed for profiting on artists after their overdoses that happen while the artist is signed to the label. It's completely unacceptable. Just thinking about the animal abuse and Lou Dog, like I want to blame Bradley so badly, but the fact is he was signed to a label and they should be ashamed and they should be publicly shamed. I mean, all of these labels that are just profiting off of people dying, it's not okay. Bradley's dad, you know, he was a home builder who played guitar for fun. He was like a weekend warrior. He played Jim Croce covers on the weekends at parties. His mom was a piano teacher, which that just sounds like such an idyllic childhood. I can't even imagine. It's like the Gullah Gullah house. Like, you're just surrounded by music and nice people all the time. That sounds amazing. He took to piano, and he was really young when he started playing piano, but then by the time he was 10, his parents divorced and his mom took custody of him. There is this VH1 Behind the Music about Sublime, and I highly recommend it. But his mom talks about him having ADHD in school and him just having like a lot of problems in school because of ADHD. And that's what made him move to his dad's when he was 11. And I can totally relate. I mean, I think that if you grew up in the 90s, you can relate to the ADHD struggle or the ADD struggle. Like, it's hard to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day and concentrate and not talk to people. And, you know, I definitely have ADHD. It's very hard for me to concentrate on anything unless I'm hyper focused on it. So, and just getting through school, especially with certain teachers or like certain settings, was extremely difficult. So, I mean, I feel like we can all relate to that. And it must have been rough when your parents just divorced and, you know, your brain isn't working exactly the same as everybody else's, and you're needing them to explain to you things 100 times, or you just don't want to be in your desk. You want to be up and playing with your friends and causing problems in class, whatever. So he got sent to live with his dad within a year. I mean, and then his dad takes him on a trip around the U.S. Virgin Islands as an 11-year-old child. What? I'm sorry, but that's wildly inappropriate. Maybe not. Okay, maybe it's fine. I don't know. Like, the hippie in me says yes. Like, let's just live on a boat and go in the Virgin Islands and do whatever and homeschool. But then there's this other part of me, the Mr. Rogers part, who says, no, you must go to school every day and have a routine, and life is not a vacation, you know? But who knows? And I wonder why his dad was in the Virgin Islands. That I don't know. I wonder if there's like any kind of juicy gossip there. And I kind of probably should have checked before I did this episode, but that's where he got his first exposure to reggae and Bob Marley, which would inspire his later music. Eric, the other guy in Sublime, he didn't really like reggae, supposedly, allegedly. But yeah, Eric Wilson, he's a musician best known as the bassist of Sublime. He was also the bassist for the Long Beach Dub All-Stars and Long Beach Short Bus, which was composed of like several members of Long Beach Dub All-Stars and Sublime. It's just like the rotating band that we all know, right? I mean, I have like 10 friends from high school that were like constantly changing their band name, but it was always the same guys. So I feel like that's just what Sublime always did too. But since 2009, Wilson has been the bassist for Sublime with Rome. I mean, we'll get to Sublime with Rome. Rome Ramirez, his dad was a jazz drummer, which I think is interesting. So here's something surprising, guys. Brad actually put music off for 2 years and went to UC Santa Cruz to study finance. He transferred to Cal State, dropped out with only 1 semester left. Who does that? Like, what? He was so close to graduating. I don't understand. I mean, unless like maybe that is where and when he started doing heroin, which would make sense because he had an education. He was so close to have an education underneath of him. When he found himself back in Long Beach in 1998, he reconnected with Wilson and like another old neighbor who played drums. And that's how Sublime was born. And one of the first songs that they would write was Date Rape. And they got a huge following playing dive bars, backyard parties. They were all over Southern California. Sometimes like hundreds of people would come out to watch them. I mean, they were making money. They were making decent money playing gigs every weekend, partying, living pretty good. So I just really wish I knew what the catalyst was for him to leave 1 semester before he had his degree. And we definitely think that his parents are rich, right? Because how are they going to like the U.S. Virgin Islands for a year while he's 11 and then like, oh, don't worry, we'll just pay for college and you can just drop out and start a rock band. And this is some trust fund kid bullshit right here. So they would sell cassettes out of their car before they landed their first official gig at a club on July 4th, 1998. And by 1998, Noel had joined Miguel Haplot in launching Skunk Records. Do you guys remember that? The label that would release Sublime's first single in 1991, Date Rape, and several of the band's subsequent records. They played some rough neighborhoods. And this is a quote from the drummer, Floyd. He said, we were like the band that everybody in the scene would show up for. If you were having a party that night and you had us play, dude, there would be two other parties in the same neighborhood and everybody was going to be at the Sublime party. That was definitely my favorite time because all the music was young. Aw, that's so sad. Wilson and Goff easily drift back to the days of backyard beer bombs, back to when 300 to 400 kids squeezed onto some punk's property and Sublime would pocket $250, big money at the time. Towering Samoans were party security, and the cops left you alone until the noise curfew after 10. Their helicopters would hover just above tree level, the searchlights tracing psychedelic patterns through the leaves. Yes, I miss the party days too, but now it's time to talk about Lou Dog, right? Because all dogs go to heaven. All right, I'm actually going to... Lou Dog is going to be a sad bit of this episode, guys. I think I need to go drink some kombucha and smoke a joint, do some Andrew Keegan yoga, meditation, calm down, and come back to this. I mean, yeah, Lou Dog is such a hard thing to talk about, right? So, and I've always wanted to do that episode with Tiffany, and I think that it's going to be Tiffany, Mike, and I. We're going to record it for the Carter Vault, and it'll be All Dogs Go to Heaven. But it is an upsetting story about what happened to Lou Dog. And it's, you know, that's where it reminds me so much of Aaron Carter as well, not just with his son and everything like that. But Bradley's dog, Lou Dog, was kind of the mascot of the band, which I do like the idea of having a mascot for the band. He's in lots of songs, of course, like Garden Grove, and just so many songs, and a bunch of the album art. So... I mean, he says in these songs that he's a bad dog owner and that he can't even take care of himself. I mean, look, guys, Bradley couldn't even take care of himself. I mean, he didn't really do that great taking care of himself in life. So, you know, probably shouldn't have been responsible for an animal. Like I said, to me, it's just weird how much him and Aaron Carter have in common. But... you know, Lou Dog did bite 4 people while they were on tour, and it was on Warped Tour, and got Sublime kicked off of Warped Tour. I mean, can you imagine how stressed out that dog must have been? Just all the noise, the chaos, the people. I can't even imagine the volume that is going on at those shows is insane. And I mean, I know, like, I've definitely been to my fair share of Warped Tours, Next Big Thing, and just lots of concerts, lots of sound checks, and my eardrums are not great either, so I can only imagine. And, like, Lou Dog's a Dalmatian, I know that they already, like, can suffer from hearing loss and hearing problems, but by the time that dog had gotten off the tour with Sublime, he had no hearing left. Also, he destroyed a studio and that they were recording in, and they almost burned down Willie Nelson's studio, which is insane. Like, that is such an insane story. Cursed Sublime, how dare you? So then this is from a quote from an article that's talking about when they were on tour, and it says, Louis the Dalmatian got booted from another hotel and had to be flown back to California in a crate. People say that let the air out of Brad's tires, and any maintaining he'd been doing went out the window. And so they're basically saying, you know, that was kind of like the beginning of the end for Brad. He went to Mexico, brought back a bunch of Valium, and was all fucking blooped out on that shit, Wilson explains. And so Sullivan buries his frustration in sarcasm. You know, another bandmate says heroin and Valium. That was a pretty productive combination. You know, the other bandmates, they say that was Brad's all-time low. His hotel faxed the label's gnarly damage reports over to the rooms. You know, when they saw the bill for what they had done to the hotel room on these, like, the hotel rooms on these stays, it was insane. I mean,
there was also reports that, like, cleaning people were concerned over the amount of needles that they were finding after they were cleaning up from a couple weeks of them being in a hotel room. And so this is a story I'm about to tell. This is a story that is from an article, and it's from Bradley. It's from Sublime's producer. And I think it's interesting, again, just keeping in mind the Aaron Carter of it all. You know, I don't think any of his producers would speak this way about him. But anyways, the producer said he needed help and I wasn't going to watch him die in the studio in front of my eyes, so I pulled the plug. Bradley came out of the bathroom. I can't even tell the story because it's so awful. And he wanted to show me where he was shooting up. That freaked me out. I said, it's over. And he got mad and fired me.
This is all very Morgan Matthews, if you ask me. But yeah, I mean, it definitely does sound like that was Bradley's all-time low, for sure. And even just that quote, he needed help and I wasn't going to watch him die in the studio in front of my eyes, so I pulled the plug. I mean, that's so sad. Like, you kind of have to pull the plug at that point. Brad got on a plane saying that his, you know, track marks were bee stings, because that makes sense. And according to Phillips, he entered treatment when he returned and he seemed focused on staying off of hard drugs. But looking back, you know, there was still people in the band that just wanted to finish the album, even though Bradley just really needed to be in treatment. And so they said it was a nightmare, but it was everything we'd worked for. And I was hoping that turning in a good record would set us up for Brad to get help, the help he needed. I went to sleep every night telling myself that. And that was from Hatblot. This is a quote from Paul Leary. He says, Noel's favorite thing to do was grab Blue Dog by the tail and yell my name. And when I'd look, he'd stick his thumb up the dog's butt. So yeah, I mean, that's, Lord have mercy on that, my soul. I can't believe I just had to read that sentence out loud. That's disgusting. I mean, yeah, he had this dog, Lou, since 1990. You know, he drags it through his drug addiction with him. And it's pretty much his alter ego, right? I mean, he was named after Lou's, after Noel's grandfather. So obviously, Lou Dog, I feel like, represented a part of his past that he was never going to be able to go home to. It's like Thomas Wolfe says, you can't go home again. And just the fact that they let Lou Dog disappear for a week and they tell it as like a tale of like Bradley was on the couch crying all week and it's supposed to be sweet. But I mean, this guy was obviously not a decent dude. And, you know, when he died in 1996, Lou was cared for by Miguel Havolt. That's the guy that also said that Bradley, you know, should continue to work on the album instead of go to rehab. And Lou Dog died on September 17th, 2001, which is sad. Brad, he ended up, like, he had paid $500 for Louie. He saved up and bought him. The guy who owned him when he was a puppy had him tied around a toilet seat in his front yard, which is terrible. So, I mean, at least we're glad he got saved from that fate. But yeah, like I said, he did become deaf in one ear after being on stage for so many years. And then on Stand By Your Van, you can hear Brad say, Louie, 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 into the loudspeaker. I mean, that's because at that time, Louie's hearing was so bad. I mean, it was completely gone. The only way he could hear his name called was like through a loudspeaker. And when he passed away, Louie, he was cremated, just like Brad, and half of his ashes lie next to the headstone. And the rest are scattered at sea, same spot where Brad was scattered. I mean, I know that Dalmatians genetically are predisposed to being deaf, but still, that's such a sad story. Oh, it's just really sad. So let's talk about Troy, because this is Bradley's baby mama. And she met Bradley during a tour in 1993 in San Diego. They had dated for some time before they married. Their wedding was Hawaiian themed and it was in Las Vegas. They tied the knot on May 18th, 1996, which I feel like, of course, Brad had a wedding that was Hawaiian themed. That's very on brand. And it being in Vegas just makes it like chef's kiss perfect. And then, so here's a really crazy thing about their relationship is that they get married and then he leaves on tour 2 days after their wedding.
So they do have a son, Jacob James Knoll, and he was born on June 25th, 1983. And, you know, unfortunately, as we know, his father passed away, but he actually is a musician. He's doing really well for himself. He sounds just like his dad, I think. I mean, but I implore you to go look him up online. Jacob, I mean, it's just an unmistakable thing about his music, and is like the resemblance between him and Bradley, and just, and the music, you know, and those are just some things that I find so hard to process with all of this, with Brad and Aaron, is just leaving a child behind that's so young. God, I hope that Prince has as good a life as Jacob has had. And this is interesting. Shortly before Bradley died, he fired Leary, his manager, and every other person he could fire in his life. I mean, he pushed away literally everybody. So, and Aaron did the same thing. Leary was concerned with the drug intake, you know, that Bradley had, and he recommended that he should go off tour and go to rehab. And of course, you know, Brad got mad and he was probably high and he fired him. And when he got sober, he called him and made peace with him. You know, they only made up over the phone. But after they made up, Brad, you know, relapsed and died in 1996. And he left behind an unreleased album. What's crazy is that that is the album that made Sublime a household name. And like I said, I think that is because Bradley died. I think if he didn't die, Sublime probably would have, you know, fizzled out, like with the Eve Sixes and the Lit and, you know, the other bands of its time. But maybe, who knows? I mean, Gwen Stefani is still relatively famous, right? Did leave a fortune for his wife and little son because of the fact that this album became so big after he died. And that's one just like super positive thing about the story. I mean, she was rumored to have a net worth of over $1 million at the time. So I think that's great. But I can't even imagine being married, and then a week after you're married, your husband dies. He relapses on tour and dies. That's terrible. And Jacob was almost a year old, just like Prince. You know, Brad essentially wanted to go watch the sunset and tried to wake up the other members of his band, but nobody wanted to go with him. And so he took some heroin and went out there and shot up and went to watch the sunset. But unfortunately, you know, I think probably what happened is that if he had gone to rehab and gotten clean, dabbling again, what can a lot of times happen is you don't realize that your tolerance has gone down so quickly, or maybe you're buying it from a different source. But, you know, they were all sharing the same drugs, and he went out and shot up and he overdosed. I mean, definitely completely accidental, which is so sad. I mean, just like Aaron, right? I know I've said that like 800 times in this episode, but it is just like Aaron, and it's completely accidental. Thought he could handle his drug use far more than he could. And it should be such a warning to anybody who casually uses drugs. I mean, you don't know, especially with fentanyl now, like you just really don't know what you have, or like, you know, it's just so dangerous. This is like a huge problem. And I mean, not to ruin the respect anyone has for Bradley, for Brad or Sublime, like as a musician or a band, but like, honestly, who overdoses on heroin on the beach when they have a kid to raise? I'm sorry. That's like kind of a shitty thing to do as a parent. I mean, I would love to do that. I would love to go to the beach and drink all day and not have responsibilities and or just do heroin, whatever. But that's not adulthood. That's not reality. Hello. So it's just super, super shitty as a parent and as a husband. And I know we're not supposed to talk that way about, you know, addiction and things like that, but it's I just feel like it's terrible. And it's, I think it's terrible that Aaron did it too. Just like any other idolized musician who succumbs to that lifestyle or commits suicide and just leaves their children behind like that, it makes me lose respect and really just not want to listen to them at all sometimes, which I know is terrible to say because we shouldn't talk about addiction in those terms, you know, but that is how I feel sometimes. And, you know, there has been a lot of instances over the last decade or so where I've tried to introduce Sublime to friends who, like, you know, it's usually a very bad idea. Because if somebody hasn't listened to Sublime before, they're not going to find date rape funny. They're not going to, you know, they're going to think you're weird, especially when they hear Mary, a sex about, like, a song about sex with a minor, which has the line 15 years old plus one. Hotter than a microwave oven. Oh, and then there's Wrong Way. You know, a story of a child prostitute who is rescued from her pimp dad by some sort of protagonist, which I think is Brad in the song, and then goes on to fuck her, like, the same way. I don't know. It's terrible. It's a horrible song. A cigarette pressed between her lips, but I'm staring at her tits. It's the Wrong Way. Strong if I can, but I am only a man, so I take it. So I take her to the can, it's the Wrong Way. You know, it's dark. It's dark, dark stuff. And it's all tied into this neat reggae ribbon, which, you know, honestly, 17-year-old me had no business listening to. If you can get past, like, all of the messed up lyrics and songs, and the fact that they've stolen most of their music, that's fine. You know, it's fine. You can listen to it. And it's hardly the best, you know, rock or, like, jam band of all time, but I do think it is a good reflection of, like, 90s Long Beach, but it's also a good reflection of, like, blatant cultural appropriation. And I think maybe we just leave Sublime off of the next Ultimate 90s playlist. Three white guys from LA covering Bob Marley is not something we need. Three white guys from LA singing in Jamaican accents. That's not what we need as we come into 2023. I just want you all to release it from your playlist. Okay. It's gone now. It's gone. The universe has it. Give it to God. Okay. Chris died for your sins. When stripped back and writing about his own experience of drug addiction and relationships, there were moments where Noel's beautiful tone shines through in songs. And when you take away all the garbage and you just look at his, like, Brad's experience of drug addiction and relationships, there are moments where there's this tone that shines through in, like, Bad Fish and Pool Shark. It's not enough to be a vibe. And there's a little gold in there, I will say. But it's, like, so tarnished by too many deeply problematic and fucked up songs. And not the most positive lyrics, but it is free speech. Also, a dead guy can't defend his side, so, you know, I don't want to be too harsh. And he can't explain his choice of writing some of these words or lyrics, I mean, except for the one he did, which was date rape, and that was kind of a really bad story. So Bad Fish is a trash song. Let's talk about it. Even though people say it's their best song, I mean, do you think any member of this band could define the word sublime? Think about that for a minute, okay? People like this band because Brad died. There's lots of similar bands that came out around this time. No one cares about them now at all because they're all still alive. Rock and roll is dead because we don't support artists who are alive. Full stop. Okay, maybe not, but that's my thesis. I loved Sublime so, so, so much. I love the nostalgia of thinking about them on Warped Tour. It's sad to me to go back and see how truly problematic this band was, but also just all of the things that Bradley went through in his life, from his parents' divorce, struggling in school, being told he was Jamaican for several years, and then forcing that onto the American, you know, lexicon and psyche of the 90s. And then having a child, being addicted to heroin, getting married, dying while he's on tour, you know, a fucking not even a year after his child is born and a week after he's married. Mamma mia, it's terrible. So I think that, I know I said this a lot, but going into this, I knew there were so many similarities with Prince and Aaron and Bradley and his son, Jacob, but I just didn't realize it was going to be, I don't know, I guess I didn't realize it was going to hit this close to home. So I'm glad I did this episode. It did remind me that I want to do an episode about Aaron Carter's dog situation, the animals, because I don't think that how Lou Dog was treated was anywhere near as badly as how Aaron's animals were treated. And that's something. So it's always fun to look back at these bands and say, you know, I loved them so much, but like, were they really that good? Were they problematic? And even if they were problematic, were they good? You know, I don't think Sublime was actually good, unfortunately. I think there was a little bit of talent in there somewhere, but it really needed to be cultivated and harnessed, and that was never going to happen because they were all in active addiction. My friend on Twitter, my friend Joker of Pop, he shared a clip of Jacob the other night from a band practice, or actually I think it's a performance. He's really talented, really, really talented. But it's weird how the universe works like that, right, guys? He sounds just like Bradley. I will tell y'all, he sounds just like Bradley. But it's weird how the universe works like that. And 2 days ago was Bradley's birthday. And look, Bradley, every day we love you just a little bit more. So I'm a little late on the episode for his birthday, but, you know, I did want to do this episode for his birthday. It was 2 days ago. And when I'm recording this, which is on the 24th, so this will come out a little late for his birthday. It'll be his birthday week still. And man, what do we think Bradley would have been up to if he was alive today? I mean, would he have gotten sober? Would he still be performing? I mean, it's really hard to know. But Sublime with Rome is still powering through. They are still performing, which is wild. Rome Ramirez, he's really talented. I don't care to go see Sublime with Rome. I'm sorry. And I think I might have actually seen them once. I don't remember. I think they're going to be at Reggae Rise Up, which is happening really soon here. And I did think about going because there's going to be one in Vinoy Park, which is literally right next to me, which I've seen so many bands there. But it's going to be like Revolution, Sublime with Rome, 311, which I have some 311 stories. I kind of used to hang out with them a little bit. That's a whole nother podcast episode, I think. Yeah, I mean, I do like this lineup. It does Wiz Khalifa and then Dirty Heads, which, I mean, I feel like that's probably going to be a really good show. There's like Pepper, Tunnel Vision, Modest Yahoo. Shut up. Okay, I'm going. But then here's the problem, guys. Modest Yahoo is going to be there on Friday with Sublime with Rome. And then Dirty Heads is on Sunday. How do you... And 311's Thursday. Why did they do this? This is a terrible, like, I can't make these decisions. Modest Yahoo is probably the only person on this list that I would really be interested in seeing. But anyways, that's like the 2023 festival lineup for Reggae Rise Up, Florida. If you guys want to see Sublime with Rome, if anybody wants to go to that with me, let me know. We'll go see some Modest Yahoo or some Dirty Heads. But definitely not Sublime with Rome. I just think it's time to let Sublime go. Let's just let it go. Let go and let God. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you want more music-centric episodes, let me know. Because I had fun doing it. But now it's time to give a shout out to all of my patrons. Because you guys are amazing. But all my patrons, you guys are amazing. Of course, my executive producer, Shauna Gutierrez, Libby, Map, my friend Map, Michael, you're back. It's so good to have you back. Shallist, Tiffany, Bev, Ashley, Gail, our other Ashley, Michelle, Rain, hey girl, Emma, Sharon, psychiatric nurse practitioner, Bewildered Beauty, Stephanie Hugs, Samantha Owens, Samantha, Tiffany, Gina, Whitney, Enty, Jessica, Audio Media News, thank you, Kyle, Tiffany, my girl Tiffany B, Nora, Sam, Rave Girl, Jen, and SM, which, I'm sorry that I don't say your guys' last names on here, but I don't want to dox anybody. I just feel like That's not a good time for anybody. We've got Jordan, we've got Danielle, Abigail, Peter, Amy, Stephanie, Mo, Kelly. Back to you, Mo. Kelly, Elisa, Karen, Jessica, Audra. Wow, this is a name. So Julia, CJ, Maggie, Taylor, Imogen. Still literally like having an orgasm over the name Imogen. Okay, sorry about that. MLF, Nina Marie, Michelle, Kat, Summer, Amy, Blair, Mindy, Susan, Jessica, Nancy, Emily, Tina, Jessica, Kelly, Carissa, which I hope I'm saying that right, Carissa. So let me know if it's, I can't imagine that it's Charissa, but you never know. Bridget, Giselle, Ditsy Bitsy Spider, Heather, SCB, Larissa, Jamie, Kenzie Girl, Julia, Krista, Angelia, Joyce, Mandy, Lauren, Drunk Wives Matter, SOL88, and Angie. And I think Drunk Wives Matter is the only person who knows how to use the comment section on Patreon. What are y'all doing? Come on now. Let's go. It's almost summer. We're about to start doing like Zoom parties and stuff to watch crazy Nicolas Cage movies. So on Patreon, it's going to be amazing. We could watch House of Carters. Come on, get it together, guys. What are you doing? I hope everybody is getting into the frame of mind for summer. And I hope that if you do leave Sublime on your summer 90s playlist, that you at least feel a little bit guilty about it. Later, guys.
I feel like I got stung. I feel like watching Star Trek and eating Chinese food or something. All right. Love it just a little bit more, a little bit more. Every day I love her just a little bit more, and she loves me the same. Every day I love her just a little bit more. Every day I love her just a little bit more, and she loves me the same. No sense at all. I saw red. One more secret lover that I shot dead. Every day I wake up just a little. We'll feel like a dog in all the yard. It's just how we are. Every day I wonder if it's over. When I wake up realizing that we hate, and I break down the wall. You say it's black, I don't believe you. I say it's white, you say I'm trying to deceive you. I'm aware of the high and the low. I'd be waiting for you in the middle, but I just lack control. Baby, if you wanna get low, baby, if you wanna get high, makes no sense at all. I saw red. One more sacred lover that I shot dead. Girls don't go crazy. Oh, girls don't go crazy. Oh, girls don't go crazy when the man uses you. No. Oh, woman, hold your man tight. If it makes you feel right, it's your whole life.